Melanie Mazarin is the founder and CEO of Gia, a non-alcoholic beverage brand inspired by Mediterranean aperitivo culture. Originally from Lyon, France, and having spent summers with her family along the Côte d'Azur, Melanie has a deep understanding of the best in food and drink, and the importance of bringing people together to share and celebrate. Melanie started her career at Goldman Sachs, which took her to New York City, and later was head of brand and marketing for farm-to-table restaurant chain Dig In. She later worked as head of retail for beauty brand Glossier, something which you'll hear has played a huge role in guiding her thinking today. While the market for non-alcoholic spirits and drinks has boomed here in the UK, it's been a bit slower to gain steam in the US. Gia's first drink is made with botanical extracts and is sugar-free, similar in style to an Amaro. The brand was launched in the summer of 2020 and has had great traction in the past 18 months, now carried by hundreds of US retailers, having also recently launched a spritzed and canned version of the drink. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. Today, my guest is Melanie Mazarin, who joined me from Mexico City to share the story of Gia.
So I moved to the US when I was 17 for college, and I think it's when you transition into a new environment that you realize all these really precious things about the environment you grew up in. And so I guess without realizing, I just grew up in an environment that was really hospitality forward. It was very food forward. Like, my family lives in Lyon, which is like the gastronomical capital of Europe. And my grandparents lived in the south of France, and my grandmother used to make the most incredible aperitif and limoncellos, which had a lot of sugar and a lot of alcohol in them, but it was this idea of like really gathering and really spending a lot of time together. I don't know how they did it, but I feel like there were always people coming into the house and always, you know, dinner tables that were constantly expanding. Very different from, you know, my busy life in New York when I moved to the US. So I really missed that. And it's something that I started kind of incorporating into my life. And I started hosting. And a few years into working, I realized that booze just wasn't really doing it for me. I was always foggy. And I thought I had an allergy. And I was talking to friends. It's only, no, that's just like the way everybody feels when they drink. And so I slowly kind of stopped drinking. And I realized that even when I was hosting dinner parties with fewer chairs than there were people, I always felt very excluded, because when came the time to cheer, when came the time to have a drink, it was basically impossible to feel included. It's like this awkward moment when no one wants to cheer with you because you have water in your glass and there's also just like not that much to drink. Mocktails are extremely sweet. They're not grown-up flavor. And so having this grown-up feeling is something that was really important to us. And it took many years for me to realize like that the answer was right in front of me when I was looking for what to do next. And so I was looking into actually the market in the UK, because you guys were really precursors in having non-alcoholic beverages and interesting zero-proof options. And I got so excited and really wanting to make, you know, a formula that I was craving, using tasting notes that I was craving when I wanted to order an alcoholic drink. And I started working on Gia, and 2 years later, we launched with our bottle.
Really, really interesting. There, as you say, are many brands here in the UK, and you'll have been looking perhaps first to the US in something that didn't totally exist or wasn't widespread in options out there for, you know, people buying, well, online, we can talk about that, but also in stores and ordering in restaurants. Talk to me a little bit about this market pitch you were trying to come up with and sort of what your idea was for a product you could bring to the US market.
Yes, it was actually very interesting, because I asked a lot of people in the hospitality industry, like, what do people ask for non-alcoholic drinks more? Because there's all these studies saying that young people are drinking less than before. And I, you know, the first thing that I did when I had this idea was bring it up to my family. And my parents, who are French boomers, said, why would people buy this if there's no booze in it? And then my brother, who was 22 at the time, said, I want to have this because I feel like I'm constantly, you know, going out and I'm on my scooter in Paris. I don't want to be drunk. I don't want to drink every night, but there's just only Red Bull or Coca-Cola available to me. And so that kind of tipped me. And I said, maybe I need to be taking this risk, because the fact that there is no supply means that there is no demand. And if this was something that was widely available, then it would be something that people order. This idea was also like, it can't just be a lesser version of something that has alcohol in it. It has to be a drink that you gravitate toward. It has to be an invitation to participate is how we always say it. You know, people often ask me for hosting tips, and I always say, like, what's most important is how quickly your first drink arrives. Like, whether you sit down in a restaurant or you get greeted by someone in their home, it's like the food is secondary, and I love food, but I'm like, what's really important is like how quickly you can get that first drink in your hand, because that's what sets the mood. It's what makes people feel welcome. And so we always say, yeah, as an invitation to participate. So the pitch was like, non-alcoholic drinks are coming. They're coming in Europe. We expect that in 5 years, about 60% of menus in America will have a strong non-alcoholic menu. It's time for flavors that are not too sweet. And also, since few people order, it's very time consuming for establishments to create fresh drinks that are made with fruits and vegetables. It's very time consuming. It takes a lot of space that they often don't have. It's labor intensive. So the pitch was, you can just have a bottle of Ghia and make a quick spritz, and that will help you. And of course, that was when we were planning on launching in restaurants on April 1st of 2020. So a lot of things changed and our pitch evolved to, can you buy this product that you have never tasted, but just take our word for it? And like, it looks good on Instagram, but it worked out anyways.
Well, I've heard you say that the timing, you know, there's a bit of serendipity there because people were spending more time at home and thinking a lot about what they're drinking and not wanting to drink too much even if they're not going out, you know, just being at home and reaching for something maybe on a weeknight or after work or something like that. There's obviously the health conscious, there's the sober, curious element. We can say people who will drink alcohol but don't want to do it all the time. And then people, of course, who don't drink at all. So you're trying to capture that whole market. But what was your idea and what you wanted this to taste like? And just walk us through that process of creating a flavor profile in a product.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm someone who used to drink and never a lot. So I don't have the sort of sobriety with a capital S tension, but like, I'm someone who loves to eat and definitely sometimes felt like I didn't want to go out to dinner because I didn't want to drink. And I felt like it wasn't appropriate to go out to a restaurant, but not order booze. And so I was thinking, like, what is something that if I'm leaving work, going home to change quickly and meeting my friends for dinner on a Tuesday, I'm craving, and it could be a glass of white wine. I wanted it to be dry. I wanted it to be refreshing, maybe minerally, you know, a touch of salt or something interesting. Maybe it's like a natural wine, something that definitely wouldn't make me feel sick, not something that was overly sweet. Like, I was never craving a mocktail or even really a cocktail. That was something that was a lot more of like, if you order a margarita, you're kind of like in a different zone already. So really thinking about this occasion that is like an occasion of a beverage that pairs well with food and honors the food that you're about to eat without competing against it. And so that was really important. And I love bitter. I loved Campari soda. I love vermouth. I love all these flavors that are not too sweet. And I also felt like all of the options on the market were extremely sweet. So I really wanted the base of our product to not have sugar. And if people want to spritz it with soda or tonic or elderberry or whatnot, then totally fine, but really giving this option to more health conscious folks. And I think I expected that more consumers of our product would be people that don't drink at all, but 80% of our customer is a customer that is looking for moderation. So it's someone that maybe doesn't want to drink during the week or is just trying to cut down on their drinking, or, you know, maybe wants to have one drink after work, but then as soon as 8 p.m. strikes, wants to have a non-alcoholic option so that they feel fresh in the morning. So different kind of personal reasons for doing this, but really important to think of this customer that is a customer that is like looking for balance and has both alcohol and non-alcohol, because that obviously your taste buds are very different and your options are very different. So that's kind of how we set out to start with our base. And we started with gentian root, which is an alpine root that's very, very common in Amaros, and it's extremely bitter. And then building it, I really wanted something that was reminiscent of the south of France. So, you know, herbal and citrusy, but still very approachable. And that also would be very adaptable. So what I love about Ghia, and I drink it every day, I haven't gotten sick of it yet, is that you can have, you know, Ghia on the rocks if you love very bitter, just maybe put an olive in it, or you can have diluted with a ton of water and just a slice of lime if you want something that's more refreshing and bitter. It's like, it's hard to mess up and it's very versatile. So that was kind of how we started out.
Really, really interesting. I'm curious about the European consumer or market, maybe eventually for you. Obviously, the US is so important. You live there now, but here people will be used to those types of drinks, liqueurs, having an aperitif. And as you say, things are sort of done around tradition and food. So what was your thinking in how you could present that type of thing to not only an American audience, but an international audience?
For sure. Well, that was the ultimate test, was giving the product to my parents' friends who are all chefs in Lyon and have very specific palates, are used to going to a lot of wine tastings and maybe natural wine drinkers. And it's obviously my dream for this category to be more widely accepted in France. And I think it is starting a little bit. We're definitely getting a lot of demand from there, which is exciting. But it was the ultimate test, is like, can we make a culinary forward product? Because if you think of the category, there's a lot of products that are very functional, and that's just not what we're about. Like, the primary focus of Gia is not to buzz you in a different way than alcohol. A lot of companies do that very well. We're also not trying to replicate a flavor that already exists. So we're not trying to make like a non-alcoholic Aperol, even though I think the spritz kind of lifestyle is very similar, and the placebo effect probably very similar as well. But so it was about creating these really amazing flavors. Like, if I think of companies I look up to, I think of Empirical Spirits, that's working with a lot of fermentation and, like, you know, rare ingredients, and also really like honoring the ingredients. We never add sugar to our products, and we really respect, you know, we make our own extracts and all of that. So really taking this idea of like flavors and ingredients, and then letting that lead the process. It's been hard, and it's been hard because if you try Gia, you get it. You get the lifestyle. It's like very, it's a formula that we spent a year and a half refining, and it's refreshing. It's like, I always say, it tastes like summer on the rocks. And so it's just really hard to describe. So we've had to sort of build this aesthetic. Like, I spend so much time on our Instagram. I do it myself because I wanted to get people to understand that this was a brand that honored the past and the formulas of the past, but really was anchored in like a more modern way of socializing. So subliminal messages around design, around colors, around, like, it's a very celebratory brand. I think we also always have this idea in the United States specifically, and that's a little bit, I think drinking in Europe is very celebratory, at least in France where I grew up. There's like less guilt around it, I think. And whereas I think in the US, it's like drinking is often a way to cope. It's like you need it. There's the wine mom syndrome. There's all of these like stereotypes that I really, really don't like. And so we really wanted Dia to be celebratory. It's not for your night off. It's for your happy, cheering, like gathering, being together. And so that was really important. So really focusing on the aesthetic, and obviously having a very generous return policy. If you don't like it, we'll refund you or you give it to a friend. And now trying to help people with recipes as much as possible, because without this element of education, it's really hard. Like, people are intimidated at the idea of making a drink.
I'm curious what the next steps will be in getting people to try the drink and to take a chance on it. I'm recalling a conversation I had with one of the co-founders of Fevertree, where he told me, you know, getting that product into the hands of the best bartenders and then to the best restaurants sort of did all the work for them, because everyone knows what a gin and tonic is. But when you elevate that with a better product and have other people doing the work for you and telling the story, that, you know, made a huge difference in people taking a chance to buy their product. Will restaurants, will retail be a big part of your growth? Or talk to me a little bit about your thinking there.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with 100% of what he says. And I'm a huge fan of Fevertree, actually. So we mix Gia with Fevertree a lot. It's getting it in the hands of people who know what they're doing with beverages, that will also honor these ingredients, but also not be scared to try new flavors, because they're your real life ambassadors. If we can have as many ambassadors as possible, but if you're able to order, you know, a Gia drink, you ask for an alcoholic drink and the person there says, oh, we have this thing called Gia and it tastes like this and it's good with that. Like, this is magic. This is what, you know, a lot of booze brands pay for. So for us, it's really getting in and help these people. During COVID, what we did is we had already started to partner with restaurants that had agreed to carry us during our launch. And we sort of just gave them bottles for free for them to sell to be able to make money during the pandemic, which was not the best way for us to start as a business, but ultimately helped us build relationship. And I think as much as I think D2C has changed the way that we consume and made things more available and enabled us to tell the story, like, people shop for drinks in person. They go to the local wine store and they go to their favorite markets. It's going to be a big strategy for us, and we're going to be reinforcing it as soon as possible with like tastings. When we launched our spritz, we were giving it away in the streets of New York, participating in events. Like, pretty much anyone that reaches out to us for product for an event will say yes, because that's, again, like, associating Gia with a very celebratory moment. We launched a year and a half ago. I think there were maybe 10 brands that existed when we did. Very different. None of them did like a bitter drink, and now there's over 100. And so we're really staying focused on not launching a million products. Like, really, as we scale, working with small farms, working with the quality of the ingredients, and creating like a forever brand that will stand the test of time.
That's very well said. I can only imagine when we're all thinking about being together more often and something that's created to be celebratory, to be shared and served to friends and family is a great sort of centerpiece for that. So lots to build on for you in that sense. But you've touched on a few things. But just lastly, talk to us a little bit about what else you're working on. Obviously, there's the mixed drinks, but what can we expect from you going forward?
So actually, over the holidays, we did a little surprise box. We partnered with a local Sicilian bakery to do a mini panettone, which is another indulgent product that is like a memory from growing up in Europe. And we created our own hazelnut paste that we kind of cheekily named the Gianduja after the Italian Gianduja. The tagline for it is, we made another delicious product no one can pronounce because no one knows how to say ghia. And it's been so popular that we're actually working on formulating it to be a permanent item. So it's like very different from beverages, but it's always with this idea of like socializing, sharing, focusing on ingredients. Like, I'm sorry, Nutella is terrible food, it's terrible for the environment. It has like palm oil galore. And so ours is made with olive oil and only natural ingredient. It has half the sugar. And so we're focusing on like really delighting customers and creating products that like maybe have a place in an occasion, in a celebratory moment, but deserve to be made better. So that was one where really we had not planned to launch it as a permanent, but we still worked on the formula for over a year and customers were asking for it so much that we'll be launching it in Q2. And then we'll probably have a few versions of the spritz, but I would say that we're really focusing on building like our core line of product with recipes that hopefully my kids will drink, not just trying to churn out flavors after flavor for the sake of newness. So we have a really big launch planned for 2023. We've been working on for 6 to 8 months already in the kind of like the beverage category still that I hope will really make it easier than ever to be participating without boozing.
Very interesting. And we look forward to seeing what is to come from you next and enjoying those flavors as well. Melanie, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Melanie Mazarin, the founder and CEO of Ghia. You can learn more about the brand and their drinks at drinkghia.com. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. Next up on today's episode, we're off to Slovenia. In the next issue of Monocle magazine, the city of Maribor is in the spotlight. Slovenia's second city has an enviable location. Adjacent to mountains, rivers, vineyards, and home to Michelin-starred restaurants. And it also benefits from a progressive mayor, Saša Arsenović. He's got big plans to revive and adapt Maribor's industrial heritage for the 2020s. And Monocle's Balkans correspondent Guy Delaney has been speaking to him and some of the entrepreneurs who found that setting up shop in the city is the best move they've made.
In the Tito era, Maribor was renowned as the industrial heart of Yugoslavia. But times have been tough since Slovenia gained its independence in 1991. Much of the heavy industry has gone, and the city's endured a long period of soul-searching. But the election of Saša Arsenović as mayor in 2018 has given Maribor forward momentum. There's visible renewal on the streets and squares, and in the world of business as well.
I'm born here. I put a lot of my energy, not only money, in the reconstruction of the city in my former life.
Saša Arsenović was one of Maribor's most prominent entrepreneurs, with a range of successful hospitality businesses. Now, as mayor, he wants to make the city a welcoming place for people to live and work.
We are fighting really 24/7, almost 1,100 days, to get better quality of life in this city and in this region. We would like to compare, we would like to go and fight with other municipalities. Because of this not working on progress thinking, we lost also a lot of brain, not only to Ljubljana, also to Graz or to everywhere in the world. Because these ambitious people didn't find enough people here which were also thinking creative and positive. So I would like that the people here are dreaming. I would like that this city and the region will be the region that you can fulfill your dreams.
What is it you're most proud of doing since you took office, Sasha? What are your achievements that you say, yes, this was a good thing that I did for my city?
I think I found a lot of good people which are working on the same goal. I think that we stopped polarization. We don't have any affair. I try also to bring people together that we feel like community and society. We try to involve all people also in our budget. And this is the next goal, how to connect our university with economy. So we have here university of knowledge, let's say, and we have here companies, and here is local government. And I'm like concierge. I should know everything, and we should offer the best service that we can bring companies here. I think that we already changed the trend.
The mayor says that part of Maribor's problem in the past was that people were too busy drinking coffee to make changes to the city. But if you want to see evidence of progress, you could do worse than come to the Teta Frida chocolate cafe. There are branches all over Slovenia, but this one, on the banks of the River Drava, is at the original site of one of the city's most successful startups. Teta Frida, that's anti-Frida to you, employs more than 100 people, making its ethically sourced chocolate bars. It's grown too big for its original riverside facility, as its products fly off the shelves around the country. But the story starts and remains here in Maribor.
We also thought about moving to Ljubljana and starting business there because, yes, the center of business in Slovenia is Ljubljana, that's the fact. But we still decided, no, we feel so good in Maribor.
Yeah.
Yes, Uroš is from Maribor, I'm even from a smaller town near Maribor. So we feel good here,
yes.
We like living in Maribor because we have everything.
Tanja Golob and Uroš Mlakar are the co-founders of Teta Frida and perhaps the best business ambassadors for Maribor.
We have potential for developing, you know, and at the end of the day in Maribor, if you have a meeting on another part of the city, you know, which is really far for us, this means maximum in Maribor 15 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
But everything is within 5 minutes. We have beautiful surroundings, we have beautiful Drava River, we have Pohorje. You know, for living is a really nice city. And
you have the city life, you have the culture in the city. There is a progress on this level, so more and more is happening in the city. On the other side, you have the nature around the city, so you can go to the mountains, to the walking in the forest. Everything is here 5 minutes from our home.
In what ways has the city helped you to grow as a business in a way that perhaps you wouldn't have got, you think, in Ljubljana?
Okay, because there is a smaller city, you can faster find niche businesses because it's also not yet so developed, you know. Another thing is that we have a good university where you can find very good educated people. Third part is that we have, here is the headquarters of the biggest Slovenian bank, Nova KBM, and they support also, of course, local businesses. Once you will start something to do here, everybody will try to help you.
It isn't exactly difficult to get to Maribor by road or rail. This place is within easy reach of Graz, Ljubljana and Zagreb. Even Vienna's less than 3 hours away. But connectivity is just part of the story. Maribor's got mountains, Michelin-starred restaurants, vineyards, an opera house and a thriving visual arts scene. There's a large pedestrianised centre with pavement cafes and a plethora of shops ranging from local and international chains to one-off ateliers. Meanwhile, the airport and industrial zone are ripe for revival.
I think we are still in the process of finding our new identity.
Urban Lapajna runs the Venture Factory, a business incubator connected to Maribor University. He helps entrepreneurs get up and running in the city, and lately he's seeing a lot more of them in different sectors.
Being all this, you know, tech ecosystem, you know, growing up and starting to bloom is of course one part, but that cannot be, you know, the whole identity. You know, the second pillar of this identity is, I think, the cultural creative part, which has always been in Maribor in a way. The creative core is all, you know, also creating a lot of momentum. So this is the second. The third is the tourism part, right? Having so much, you know, opportunities, cultural and natural heritage, it's creating the identity of the whole region, not only Maribor.
The streets of Maribor are alive with the sound of music, or at least they are if you're walking past the Bass Music School. This is the headquarters of a nationwide chain of music schools, and its founder, Mate Hotko, says he'd rather be living and doing business here than his previous bases, which include Ljubljana and New York.
It's a very safe place. It's beautiful for raising kids. You can travel around the world wherever you want to, because we have all the connections necessary for that. And on the other hand, we actually live very high standard here. Of course, if you also have some jobs or stuff to do or concerts or whatever you need to in Ljubljana, let's say, it's like a 1 hour drive. It's like nothing.
How about in terms of starting up a business? You've obviously done that here. How easy is it to get started and get established?
If you have an idea, it's always easy to start a business, but it's really hard to keep it. I would say in Maribor, if you have idea for boutique business, as I mentioned before, not so much as an industrial business, I think everybody has big opportunities today.
It's not all about nationwide chains in today's Maribor. Creative individuals have also found this city can be fertile ground for their kind of business. The streets of the old town are dotted with ateliers owned by jewellery designers, artists, and people like Tanya Uvera. She creates custom knitwear in her workshop cum showroom just up the hill from the riverside.
We were in Ljubljana, but we moved here. Here was easier, so we moved here.
How have you seen a change? You've been here 20 years, you say. How have you seen the change over that time?
Big change, very big change. I started here from nothing. The people were... The Maribor isn't a big fashion city, you know. This is a football city. But I think we, in these 20 years, we developed this fashion in Maribor too. Our new he is making big changes, you know. I enjoy the city, how it's progressing and how it looks now. A lot of streets are new. There is a lot of business. These local stores and gastronomy, I think it's very good here.
The annual Day of Maribor is a celebration of everything which makes this city such an attractive place to set up shop. Mayor Sasha Arsenovic created this event to increase civic pride. There are already plenty of reasons to be proud, and he says there's so much more to come.
I know that we will never be the most beautiful city, not the biggest city, but I would like that we all work on the best quality of life for us, for our visitors, for investors.
As the mayor himself says, 10 years ago, few people had heard of Bitcoin. Now everyone knows about cryptocurrencies. Sasha Arsenovic reckons that Maribor's profile is heading in the same direction. A decade from now, he says, everyone will be talking about the city for all the right reasons. For Monocle, in Maribor, I'm Guy Delaunay.
Monocle's Balkans correspondent Guy Delaunay. My thanks to Guy, and do be sure to read more on doing business in Maribor by checking out Guy's report in the February edition of Monocle magazine, issue 150. I'm Daniel Bache, and I'm afraid this is my very last episode as host of The Entrepreneurs. It's been an absolute pleasure to produce and present the show over the past 4 years, over 200 episodes, discovering some incredible businesses and founders on behalf of you, the listeners. Please do continue tuning in, though, and keep an eye on monocle.com for the latest episodes and for more on our print business handbook, The Entrepreneurs. Find all of the print subscription options over on the website. My thanks as well to the incredibly talented Jack Jewers, who mixes and edits this show every week. Thank you all so much for listening, and goodbye.